Yet these setbacks, rather than crippling Mardonius's strategy, served, ironically, to give it a second wind. Pausanias, his spirits much boosted, felt sufficiently emboldened to take up a new position, much closer to the Asopus, and therefore to the enemy. Mardonius, hoping to catch the Greeks on open ground, immediately began to hurry along the opposite bank, shadowing them, waiting for a chance to strike. It never came. Pausanias, even as he inched onto the plain, had been sure to move sideways into the territory of Plataea, and there was not a spur along the route he took, not a stretch of elevated ground, but the Plataeans were able to guide the allies along it. By the time that their dispositions had been completed, the Spartans were dug in along a broken ridge on the right of the battle line, and the Athenians were installed on a hillock on the left. The remaining contingents had to be content with occupying the lower, and therefore more exposed, ground in the centre. Mardonius, eyeing up his opportunities from the opposite side of the Asopus, must have felt a quickening of excitement. He may not yet have been in a position to launch a frontal attack, but if he could just tempt Pausanias to continue his advance across the river, the Persian cavalry would have him. Mardonius was a practiced Greek fighter. He knew that the instinct of a hoplite army was always to seek out battle. So when the heavens themselves, speaking through incontrovertible omens, warned the Persian high command not to go on the attack, Mardonius was more than content to listen. Time appeared to be on the side of a policy of wait and see. Barely 5 miles away, in Thebes, food was in abundance, including fodder for the animals, and Mardonius had reserves of treasure enough to flood the whole Greek camp with gold. He did as the gods had advised. He kept to the north bank. He did not cross the river. But nor did Pausanias. Instead, blunting all Mardonius's expectations of how a Greek general would behave, he kept grimly to his position. Indeed, far from fracturing, the Greek battle line grew ever stronger. Eventually, on the 8th day of the standoff, Mardonius lost his patience. His cavalry were ordered to make a raid on the Kithron passes. A huge wagon train, loaded down with provisions from the Peloponnese, was successfully ambushed. The drovers and mules alike were massacred. Then, leaving the corpses to litter the foothills where they would be clearly visible to the Greeks down on the plain, the Persians, once they were sated of slaughter, drove the wagons back in triumph to their camp. Now it was Mardonius's turn to be emboldened. His cavalry, buoyed by their victory, began to launch raids directly on the enemy positions across the Asopus. Closing in on the Greeks whenever they ventured to approach the river, the wheeling horsemen would leave the shallows a havoc of drifting feathered corpses and the allied lines increasingly thirsty. A few hours of this, and the Asopus was abandoned entirely to the Persian cavalry. The only source of water left to the Greeks was now a single spring. As the sun blazed in the pitiless Boeotian sky, jostling lines of parched men began to crowd around the well, armed with buckets, jars, and wine sacks. For the Athenians in particular, the task of keeping themselves supplied with water was grueling. The spring, which rose just behind the Spartans' encampment, lay a full 3-mile trudge away from their own. A day passed, and then a second, and the immobile Athenian infantry, stung and tormented by the ceaseless buzzing of the enemy, began to have second thoughts. Indeed, the bolder the Persians showed themselves, the more infuriated their stationary targets became, for none of the Greeks could get to grips with the mounted archers. Still, the galloping, wheeling horsemen continued to test the limits of their own mobility, until on the 3rd day of their harassing of the allied line, a contingent of Persians succeeded in outflanking it altogether. Rounding the ridge of broken hills on which the Spartans had embedded themselves, the cavalry erupted into the phalanx's rear. Ahead of them, directly in their path, lay the precious, and it seems unguarded, spring. Quickly, before the Greek reserves could arrive to stop them, the horsemen smashed the wells, choked the spring itself, and then withdrew in triumph. A hugely enterprising blow, and one fatal, of course, to all Pausanias's hopes of maintaining his forward line.